Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network on this February 28th, Friday at 1 p.m. Central Time. Have some good preliminary news coming out of Washington in terms of what has not worked out between Trump and Zelensky. I'll wait for more definitive information this weekend to put on your roadmap. But the preliminary results of this meeting look mildly hilarious. And that's good news from my vantage point. Zelensky has allegedly been asked by the president to leave the White House, presumably in a hurry. Some other things I'll mention on this just briefly. But if you're wondering how that thing has gone today, while this is not a definitive word on the whole situation, there will be some additional things added to your roadmap tonight and tomorrow on that story, as well as everything else that we're trying to cover for you. The roadmap is pretty good as of this broadcast time live, but nonetheless, it will be constantly improved tonight and over the weekend so that you'll have a pretty good look at a lot of different things and a lot of different subjects from sources far more qualified than I. So today's topic is ultimately going to be Germany. Germany is a microcosm of the death of the West. We'll pay a little special attention today to Dr. Alan Zabrowski's article about the German elections for the UNS Review. Topics and links for the show roadmap, as I've already mentioned, gradually expand before showtime and through the weekend. We will also, of course, in terms of the roadmap, once this show posts, we will get the archival link up there as well so that people in foreign countries who are following us via Russian VKontakte can get to the original show if they have a good working knowledge of the English language. I unfortunately cannot help them with 99% of the languages that they would be speaking as primary languages. So here we go. Dankoff's latest brief blog before we get back to Germany. Mark Dankoff's Catacomb. By the way, I upgraded my WordPress site yesterday. That isn't terribly obvious. Now they're asking me for brief blogs every day, and I can post videos and things of this sort, which will enable me to do a much better job of using my old website in regard to news stories. I don't simply post for VT Foreign Policy. Need to get back to using my own website, and that includes using that website for some good theological and biblical writing for those in my constituency who want to see more of that out of me. I haven't been doing too much in that department because that requires solid research and study of a character that I haven't had time to do recently because I've been negotiating on getting another car. My existing car, as my Lutheran pastor put it last night when he said, "It is finished," in reference to my car. I came right back at him with "Gethsomai," which is the biblical Greek version of "It is finished." My car is just about finished. I can still use it to get to the grocery store and so forth, but I'm ponying up for another one so, in fact, I can drive to places distant on occasion if I have to do a out-of-state story or out-of-San Antonio story, both for RBN as well as for other news sources that would ask me to travel from time to time. One of the things I want to do, just on a personal note, now that my mother has joined my father in Section 54 of Arlington National Cemetery, is to drive up there to visit my parents' grave for the first time. You know, what's kind of strange is that with all of the times that I have been in Arlington National Cemetery to visit the graves of old friends and to attend one military honors funeral there quite a number of years ago now for my Air Force godfather. That one goes back almost 28 years ago. I have not been visiting that cemetery, haven't had a chance to do so since my father was interred there in 2009. And certainly since my mother's internment this past October 15th, joining my father, getting this car will enable me to do that as well as to get to other places when I need to, whether I need to get on an airplane on occasion if somebody pays my way to go someplace to cover a story, or whether I drive to one of those informal and unpublicized gatherings of some of the people in our movement, I'll be in a position to do that. Now, getting back to Mark Dankoff's Catacomb, only God can drain the swamp. Why did I post that yesterday? I posted it because WordPress had a question for me after I upgraded my site. They asked, if you could be someone else for a day, who would you be and why? My answer was God, in order that I could drain the swamp and disemploy Joel Osteen. That was the brief summary of why I wanted to be God, at least for a while. Probably would be a great danger to the world if I became God, which isn't going to happen. But there are some other things there that are worth your time on that particular blog, including an absolutely hilarious video, courtesy of, I believe, Ukraine Watch, entitled Bad Dreams. This thing is an incredibly hilarious thing, especially with what happened at the White House today. The bad dreams of Vladimir Zelensky and what happens when he wakes up. Take a look at that video. If you want to bypass my brief stuff there, fine. But I think you will find that video to be absolutely invaluable. Well, okay, there's Germany. We'll get back to that one in terms of Zabrowski for UNS. Suffice it to say that between that story and the story of Trump and Zelensky's meeting in the White House this afternoon, which apparently ended pretty abruptly, this might in fact suggest, might suggest that maybe Trump was listening to Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon's sage advice for Trump we have in a video posted on the roadmap. Basically, Bannon was urging Trump just to get the hell out of there and to cut every tie possible, just to get out of this thing and get the United States out of it once and for all as a means of avoiding mucking up things and getting us into a third world war. Bannon at one point, I don't know if he says it in this video or not, but he had urged Donald Trump to avoid the same thing that befell Richard Nixon. Mr. Nixon years ago let Lyndon Johnson's war in Vietnam become Mr. Nixon's war in Vietnam. This time Trump needs to cut this thing once and for all. Get out. Repair relations with the Russians. Get into a better situation with the global economy as well as the world economy. And if the EU doesn't want to listen to common sense, to hell with them too. So all of these global homotypes in the EU, and I'm thinking especially of Starmer and Macron, not exclusively so, but especially as well as this joker who won, Merz, who won the German election, however sad that may be. He's the so-called conservative alternative. He's global homo. He's pro-war. He's pro-Ukraine. And last but not least, he is owned lock, stock, and barrel by, among others, BlackRock. It tells you all you need to know about this outcome of this German election. But we will cover that in more detail shortly when we get back to Al Zabrowski's article, Dr. Alan Zabrowski's article, with the UNS review. I have a number of other articles on Germany, including one from Alexander Dugan, I believe, that will be posting either tonight or tomorrow to get this roadmap filled out by the end of Saturday. And that's always been my best attempt with you when I can't do the job I want to do the night before the broadcast. But I do an okay job of getting all of my stuff up there before the show that will at least cover what we want to do on the air. All of the things that I have researched from the week, the best things, will still get up there on your roadmap. So I work this thing through the week. Sometimes I don't get everything posted that I absolutely want before we go live. But rest assured, whatever needs to be up there will go up. So keep an eye on the archive for the link to this show, because the show roadmap, which will be published, of course, immediately after the live version of this broadcast, the show roadmap will get you to where you need to go to see what we're covering, as well as what we are going to be covering over the weekend, simply in terms of the news sources and the topics that I want you to have, even though we can't possibly do justice to that on this show. The format simply doesn't allow it. Now, in terms of Trump and Zelensky's meeting in Washington on February 28th today, we hope that he's following Steve Bannon's sage advice. Would seem that maybe Bannon's inspired him a little bit. I am going to have to reserve judgment on this until I see more of the particulars of what comes out of this situation. But it's certainly good news that Trump apparently kicked Zelensky's A++ out of the White House. Intel Slava Z, which, of course, is a Russian website, I believe officially tied to the Russian government, has a hilarious video, absolutely factual, that shows the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States reacting to the Trump-Zelensky dispute. She's in absolute tears. I don't know about you. I have to admit that as a Lutheran pastor, it bothers me that I have a somewhat sadistic streak when I see all of these limp wrists and global homotypes and warmongers and Jewish financiers and people who think that Volodymyr Zelensky and Benjamin Netanyahu are the greatest thing on earth. I have to admit I don't mind seeing them suffer a little bit. I'm not suggesting that they ought to be put in a torture rack, at least not for the next week or so. But when you just see the visual evidence that speaks more than any amount of verbiage can in regard to the way they're feeling, take a look at that video. And if that video reflects in reality what really happened this afternoon in the White House, then we take our hats off to Mr. Trump on this one. I guess J.D. Vance poured in on Zelensky as well. We do have, if I haven't posted, and I believe that I have, some brief video of the exchange between Trump and Zelensky that I guess, you know, was live and real, not AI, but live and real before they cut it off. You could see that things were escalating quite nicely to a point to where I guess that was probably about 10 seconds before Mr. Trump had Mr. Zelensky booted out of his office and hopefully on his way back to Kiev, at least for the next 5 minutes. And in terms of Mr. Zelensky's money and his real estate holdings in the United States, and all the fraud that has been going on with Zelensky and his regime in regard to American money, the EU can worry about the EU, but since I'm an American citizen, I'll worry about American money. That needs to be looked at. And, of course, the war crimes of Mr. Zelensky that are not being reported in the West need to be taken into account in all of this as well. The United States, among other things, needs to come clean, not only with what was happening with the Victoria Nuland, Robert Kagan, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama cabal that goes back to February of 2014, but we also need to be taking a look at Zelensky's most recent crimes, which include the Synagogue of Satan's persecution of the Russian Orthodox Church. It's absolutely hideous what has been going on over there in that regard. I'd like to get Father John Whiteford of Spring, Texas, back on this show to discuss that angle on things, because as a Russian Orthodox priest, who is also a good Texan-American, he would have a lot of information and insights on this that I don't have or would only partially garner from abroad and from careful observation of certain news sources. So hopefully we get that done for you at some point. But this is all very hopeful in terms of what happened today, February 28th. I don't know if you saw the brief exchange between Congressman Bob Dornan of California years ago with Steve Gunderson, the Republican congressman from from Wisconsin, who was also a homosexual. The Bush people in the Republican Party were trying to get more inclusion of gays into the GOP. I think they've had, sadly, some success in that regard. But nonetheless, it was thought that Steve Gunderson ought to be making a good case on the floor of the House in regard to all of these terrific things that the Republican Party could be doing for the gay movement. And, of course, he was opposed by the infamous B1 Bob Dornan of California. And in this exchange, Zelensky referred to Bob Dornan as homophobic. For the record, Bob Dornan came right back at him with the following. This is a direct quote, folks. They subsequently had to strike this from the congressional record, but you can still see it on C-SPAN. Bob Dornan said, "You faggot, you queer, you promiscuous fairy." So things went downhill from there. And I have a feeling if we'd let the Trump-Zelensky exchange go on just a little bit longer, I think the president would have had some very animated language with which to usher this guy out the door. And of course, I certainly give Mr. Trump not my papal blessing for getting rid of Zelensky, however he chose to do it. We might give the president a one-time pass on using language that normally would not be seen as particularly presidential, but in this particular case would have been extremely effective in telling this guy straight from Donald Trump what Alexander Dugin has already said in more clinical language, and that is that Zelensky is finished. So if Zelensky's finished, this global homo Ukrainian project is finished, now we need to get at the bottom of the real perpetrators of this whole thing, both in the previous American government, and sometimes that involves members of the Republican Congress, Republican Party in the Congress, as well as the Democratic. It certainly involves the previous administration, and that goes back not simply to Joe Biden, but also going further back to the Barack Obama era. And when this Newland Kagan project was really going strong in regard to Ukraine. By the way, I have some film footage, which I will find and try to get on this particular roadmap. You can see on the night of the real step up in the Maidan revolutionary activities, you can see John McCain up in a press box someplace filming all of this stuff approvingly. And at that particular juncture, I think he was standing right next to the then American ambassador to Ukraine. Enough said about John McCain. Thankfully, he's not with us anymore. But there's a strong holdover in terms of people who think the way McCain does. Let's put them out of business at the same time that we put this Ukrainian project and Mr. Zelensky specifically out of business and start prosecuting him and prosecuting his regime, not just for financial fraud, but for war crimes that have not been reported adequately or at all in the Western media. And let's make sure that whatever this guy's real estate holdings might happen to be in Miami, among other places, let's keep this guy out of this country. Let's do something to get this guy disenfranchised in regard to this laundering scheme that he has had going for a long time that involved himself, certainly, but undoubtedly the U.S. Agency for International Development and their separate scams with the Democratic Party. Who's been profiting off this financially, folks? This goes a long way and well beyond the purview of this show, but we need to get to the bottom of it, and some people need to be prosecuted, and some people need to be put in prison, whatever it takes. But Mr. Zelensky, hopefully on the basis of what happened today, Alexander Dugin's statement is absolutely correct. Zelensky is finished. And hopefully the whole global homo rules-based international system will be finished as well, to be replaced by something that makes America stronger, that respects foreign countries, both our allies as well as our adversaries, and that brings us back to a saner day when we don't have to have interaction with foreign countries that is based on war and duplicity and military-industrial complex profits and propping up bums like Zelensky and everything that he represents. End of story. Well, let's see, in terms of this this whole issue, we may not even get to Germany today before I take some calls after our half-hour break, but we'll try, and Alan Sobrowski will understand that we've got his article for us right up there on the big board up front, even if I can't do honest justice to it. But nonetheless, here's what the Ukrainian MP Goncharenko had to say today on the conflict between Zelensky and Trump. He said, "This is just idiocy," he says. "The U.S. will completely shut down aid to Ukraine. It's very good to put pressure on the interests of the state to defend positions, to fight for our interests. Another thing to fight for your ego and to try to show how cool you are. This is just idiocy. With one hand, we give away our minerals. With the other, we also take away the aid that we could somehow receive," Goncharenko wrote. He gave a quote-unquote, now this is a direct quote, a very shitty prognosis for the outcome of what happened. Number one, the U.S. will completely cut off aid to Ukraine. Number two, the U.S. will cut off Zelensky's private parts. No, that's not in there. What was said here under number two, the U.S. will stop the transfer of intelligence data on Ukraine. Number three, there's a possible threat of Starlink shutdown. Right now, the MP added, Zelensky has put millions of people at risk, and this is madness, unquote. Not to mention Zelensky's backers, who have been putting millions of innocent people at risk. That's another story that many of you, most of you, would already identify with in terms of the gist of this. Let's think about it now, says the Ukrainian MP. Who is most happy about what happened today? I think it's Putin, he says. Imagine you fought for 3 years with Ukraine and couldn't win because the Ukrainian people showed themselves heroically and the whole world united around us. Yeah, right. Take a look at a big globe, folks, and look at the number of people who were backing this. The vast majority of people in the entire world weren't backing this at all, but that's another story. And now Ukraine's most important ally broke off all relations with us live on the air. Who do you think will benefit from this? Oh, the average Ukrainian person, pal. The average Russian person, pal. The entire world, pal, in terms of getting this kind of garbage stopped once and for all. That's who's going to profit by it. You and some of your other pals who may have had your own hands in the till in terms of USAID and CIA money and the National Endowment for Democracy and all the people operating this gravy train for this bogus, illegitimate regime in Ukraine, they're crying about it. But I suspect that most of the rest of the world, including a lot of American kids that don't want to go to war for a bum like this and a movement like this, they just feel fine right now. Now, who will benefit from this, he says? Ukraine, our army, our people, our nation? No. And it's just the height of cynicism to sit and praise Sonyash from warm Kiev apartments and bars. I have no words, unquote, Goncharenko also wrote. In fact, folks, the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian army and what is left of Ukraine as a nation state will profit by this, which means that this MP and Zelensky and the head of Budanov, the longtime head of the Ukrainian GUR intelligence agency and all the rest of these people, they need to be hung. This will get this settled once and for all. Bring these criminals to trial. Get rid of them. And the Ukrainian people, or what's left of them, will absolutely profit by this, as they have been destroyed in terms of lives lost, destroyed in terms of economic infrastructure, led by an illegitimate regime installed by Global Homo. And demographically dying because of the number of young people who have already left that country who have managed to get out. So that's where we are, folks. Don't listen to this guy. He's an absolute boob. Well, let's see. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, I won't say that he's one of my great favorites, but it is reported by Geopolitica that after Trump mopped up the floor with Zelensky during the meeting at the White House, that Bessent said, thank you, Mr. Trump, President Trump, for standing up for the American people and our nation on the global stage. That's what the Treasury Secretary had to say about this meeting. Whatever else about Bessent might be my own personal view. Nonetheless, it's absolutely clear that he's got it entirely right this time. By the way, the Russian-Ukrainian war, as you might notice from the last couple of broadcasts, I'm not giving you kind of day-by-day and week-by-week battle reports because these reports don't particularly change at this juncture. Everything is going in Russia's direction as it should in regard to the so-called contact line. So whether you're looking at the Kursk region of Russia, or whether you are looking at the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, or you're looking at Kherson and Zaporozhye regions, it's all going Russia's way in terms of very slow but aggressive attrition types of gains. that are now being accompanied by the territorial gains that come when the side that is losing the attritional war starts finally losing some pretty significant territory. The air war is the same story. Night after night, I review this stuff for you just to see if there's a new angle on this or something that hasn't necessarily been reported before in any American sources that would help you to understand what's happened here or what is happening. But this is pretty much the picture. Russia is having its way in the air. Russia is having its way on the ground. And we'd have to suggest that Russia perhaps is beginning to have its way, finally, diplomatically, as Donald Trump booted Zelensky out of his office, supposedly, this afternoon on Pennsylvania Avenue. So this is all very good, but there is one summary article for RT that gives you the last 3 years of this conflict. If you have followed it at all, and I have followed this thing assiduously since it started in earnest with the sources that I have come to trust for these kinds of things in regard to military and political and diplomatic events. The military side of this, the military campaign over 3 years, take a look at that RT article on your roadmap. It's entitled From Russia's Losing, quote unquote, to Ukraine is Done For, quote unquote. After 36 months of active fighting, says RT, navigating retreats, counterattacks, and protracted assaults, Russia has gained the initiative. And I put in parenthesis on your roadmap that I deem this, in writing at least, to be as terrific a synopsis of these last 3 years since February of 2022 that you're likely to find. It will cover all of the basic things that have happened in this campaign from day one. You'll be reacquainted or acquainted for the first time with the major battles and all the things that went into the to and fro of this until finally everything that those of us who had studied this with some good source help knew was going to happen, and that is that Ukraine would eventually fall apart militarily like a cheap suit. That's now happening. Hopefully Ukraine's backers in the West, especially in high places, continue to fall apart like a cheap suit. But take a look at that RT article, tremendous synopsis of the last 3 years of this conflict in regard to the military aspect of it especially. Gene Hackman died, folks. I'm sure all of you know that by now. It's being reported that perhaps his death was suspicious, and that of his late wife. Take a look at the NBC News link on that story. We will be back. Eddie Arnold sings July, You're a Woman, as we head toward the half-hour commercial break. Zabrowski, you might get stiff today in terms of my talking much about your article, but hold on.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hemp Paste by Mynutra. Why is hemp paste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hemp paste. Hemp paste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy hemp paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product, is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
I'm sorry if I hurt you. I'll make it up day by day. Just say you love me like you used to, and make the world go away.
We are back. You are listening to the Dankoff Report on the Republic Broadcasting Network live from San Antonio, Texas. We're supposed to be covering Zebrowski's article for the UNCE Review on the German elections. I'll still get to that and hopefully have some time for some callers, but I did want to briefly mention a couple of other items that are on your roadmap. By the way, folks, if you've been seeing all of these things and various news sources, especially CNN, that show all these alleged Republicans showing up at their Republican congressman's town hall meeting where they're absolutely up in arms with what is happening with Donald Trump, at least with the majority of the things that he is doing, the chances are excellent, folks, that you're watching a George Soros-financed operation. Share this with your family members and friends. I've got a couple of things up there for you. The three Jews, Soros, Leah Greenberg, and Ezra Levin. They are the J team against Donald Trump. That's our category. Politico reports Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin, co-executive directors, indivisible, for building the blueprint for the Trump opposition. Take a look at Investment Watch blog. George Soros, anarchy groups providing anti-Trump script, fueling phony town hall protests. We have that up there for you live in the roadmap. And then I'm still hunting for something that someone sent me from Russian V. Kontakta. And this particular thing involves a news source that is called, I believe, AMUS. Looks entirely authentic. It has a picture, which we put in your roadmap, of these two people, Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin, or Levin, I'll say Levin this time. The couple behind Indivisibles, we need to research Indivisible, behind Indivisible's anti-Department of Government efficiency agitation operation, targeting GOP town halls and flooding congressional phone lines. These two are Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin. Their war chest stands at $11.7 million, bolstered by $7.26 million. From one George Soros. Folks, we need to get at the bottom of this stuff. No, you can't go in there and shoot them or beat them up. I don't advocate that sort of thing. But expose them. Expose them. And it shows like this that begin the process of exposing them, but then you need to take some of these materials to your family members and friends and have them shoot it around the country. in regard to what is really going on with this, and somehow, some way, Mr. Soros needs to disappear. Getting back to my blog, when I answered WordPress's question yesterday, if you could be one individual for a day, who would it be? I said, God. Right after getting rid of Joel Osteen, we need to make sure that George Soros disappears. Wouldn't that solve a lot of problems? We need to make sure that Netanyahu disappears. We need to make sure that Lindsey Graham disappears. And that's just the beginning. Maybe we need to have me write an article this week entitled, If You Could Be God, oh, for a week, even a day. Who would you make disappear instantly and irrevocably and eternally? Well, you get the idea. All right, so we get back briefly then to this whole issue of going past Soros. Since I've mentioned that for you, there will be a lot of things over the weekend on Israel and Gaza and Israel's nefarious activities down in the West Bank. I'll have some additional information on these USAID exposés. We'll have some good stuff up there on Iran for you. And then I have one recommendation for you of a show of the week. Mark Weber's weekly roundup with the Institute for Historical Review. Barely a month into President Donald Trump's administration, the political climate is heating up domestically and internationally. That's all I'm going to say about that, but I put a rather lengthy synopsis of what Mark Weber talks about. It is one perspective shared by some on the right, not necessarily all on the right, but Mark Weber is certainly very erudite when he expresses his opinions and his reasons for saying and writing what he does. Do business with that show. It's certainly a stimulant for thinking, which is the kind of thing that we encourage you to do, at least on this broadcast, to think and to read and to weigh and to consider. Well, let's see. Alan Zabrowski. Where are you, Alan? I've got to get to your article at least for a little bit here, or the next time you run into me, you might get rid of me. You might make me disappear, except that you can't be God for a day any more than I can. Okay, briefly, folks, the Alan Zabrowski Archive. For the UNCE Review, Germany renewed a case for disunion. Take a look at that story. Take a look at the story because it suggests that Germany is headed toward the cusp of ruin. As Alan Zabrowski puts it, I happen to share his perspective on this. The main point of departure, he says, is to recognize that after crushing and dismembering Germany during and after World War II, the United States and the USSR each undertook to mold their, quote-unquote, respective German states into their own political economic image, insofar as that was possible. And as we read through the rest of what it is that Dr. Alan Zabrowski says, and by the way, if you don't know him, he is an ex-professor at the U.S. Army War College. He is so blunt, he is so right up front with his perspective, he is so non-woke that it's amazing he wasn't court-martialed even in the old days. But he is one of the great thinkers that is out there, and whether you encounter him through reading this article or through listening to his occasional broadcasts and interviews with other people, he's an absolutely go-to guy. Which leads me to one other thing I will say about this, in case there are some callers out there. Take a look at this German election. What are the results of this German election? Well, there's Scholz, right? In the Scholz and his particular political party. And when you start looking at his political party, this is the political party that has absolutely led Germany into impending ruin, both in terms of the deindustrialization of their economy, the way in which these Russian sanctions have resulted in absolute blowback on Germany, the Nord Stream pipeline terror. Gee, we wonder who was behind that, right? Might be some people in Washington to talk to about that one. But the lion's share is that even Scholz was beginning to think that maybe there ought to be at least a few modifications in Germany's support for Ukraine and for Zelensky. Guess what? He's replaced by Friedrich Merz. Friedrich Merz, of course, is the candidate of the big political bloc in Germany since World War II. And when you start looking at that political bloc, we discover a couple of things. We discover, in fact, that Friedrich Merz is an absolute militant on the war in Ukraine. He wants to support Zelensky to the hilt. He wants to continue every anti-Russian action that he can. And supposedly this guy is being billed as some sort of an economic guru or whiz. Folks, as Alexander Mercurius of the Duran has pointed out, this guy has never built or manufactured anything in his life that involved someone who would really know how to reinstate a manufacturing economy for an entire country, much less one like Germany. Friedrich Merz is an absolute tool of BlackRock. Search that one out there, and you'll discover that the verification on that can be seen from at least 100 different sources. And so you have this situation transpiring where whether you're talking about Scholz or you're talking about Merz, as a result of these German elections, arguably an even bigger bum, albeit tabbed as a conservative, quote-unquote, by mainstream media in the West, is now taken over at the helm and wants to begin pursuing policies with Russia and with Ukraine and with military expenditures and German defense budgets and all the rest of it that suggests, in conjunction with Merz's identification, long-time identification as an asset of BlackRock, it is going to be more of the same. It's going to be even worse. So all of you people out there who voted for Merz in that particular coalition that he represents need to understand that you have just installed someone who is potentially an even bigger danger to Germany and an even bigger danger to the average German citizen and the German economy than the bum that and his ilk that you just threw out. Where does that leave us? That leaves us with the alternative for Deutschland, the AfD, Alex Weidel's party. And it's interesting that party got an unprecedented 20% in the polls. Now, at one level, you might say, boy, that's encouraging that finally the truly nationalistic party in Germany is coming to the fore. Nationalistic, populist, Germany first, as it were. And those things, as Paul Craig Roberts has pointed out, do not at all mean that you are an advocate of so-called Nazism or German National Socialism. But this is what you're going to be tagged with if you're involved with any kind of a populist and national movement in Germany that simply wants to be left alone in regard to global homo and these tools like Scholz and Friedrich Merz. Now, in this particular perspective, however, two things come to the fore for me that are quite fascinating. I don't know Alice Weidel, but it certainly is interesting that looking at her background, that the leader of the so-called, the mainstream media in the West refers to AfD as the far-right party. There can be no question that that's mildly libelous in terms of what they are trying to convey, which is that she's a Nazi. That's simply ridiculous. And in Alice's case, two things are striking to me about her background. One is that she is a practicing lesbian. That would seem to be an interesting choice for a so-called far-right party, especially in Deutschland, right? The other thing is that she was once an economist for Goldman Sachs. Well, fascinating that she has a background working professionally for the arguably the largest Jewish financial consortium, overwhelmingly Jewish financial consortium in the world. Now, I don't know how that stacks up when you compare Goldman Sachs with these outfits like BlackRock that have their fingers everywhere. But Goldman Sachs, we know what it is. We know what it represents. We know the amount of money that they are able to put into American political campaigns. This is a very curious background to me for someone who is allegedly a German nationalist and populist. But giving her the benefit of the doubt, after having said what I just said, giving her the benefit of the doubt, have you looked at a map of all of this demographically and in terms of the votes? We have such a demographic map and an electoral result map out there for you geographically that's on your roadmap. You will see that IFDA, that most, if not virtually all, of their 20% of the national German electorate came from what we used to call East Germany. Remember East Germany, the German Democratic Republic? IFDA carried that part of Germany overwhelmingly. So their 20% looks to me, just looking at the map, who knows, 95% of the East German vote? I haven't yet seen a responsible numerical figure on that, but just looking at the map, it almost looks like 100%. What is the future for that? IFDA. Well, in the case of IFDA, certainly you can argue that maybe some East Germans have figured out that if they want to be in control of their own destiny again, that maybe that's not possible if Germany remains unified. Maybe East Germany might decide to become a part of Eurasia. That certainly occurs to me as I look at this this graphic that I put on your roadmap. And in the whole question of IFDA in future elections, at least as of now, IFDA's very much improved showing hasn't made one whit of difference in regard to the policies that are going to be pursued by the German government. And whether you're looking at what has happened, yes, calling out to me, Chief?
Sure. I'm in a position where I'm not in my studio, so I haven't seen them. Let's take the first one. Bring them up. Go ahead, Vinny.
Hello, Mark.
How are you? How is Indiana?
Oh, fine. Hey, you had Johnny Punish on your show a couple weeks ago, and there's a subject matter that I'd like you to bring up with Johnny Punish. I've run across his name on YouTube, on sites that deal with archaeology in Palestine, and he's countering a lot of Israeli Zionist propaganda. And there's two films, well, there's a series that's debuting this week on Amazon Prime called The House of David, and that's a term that Christian Zionists used that they say establishes the heresy of King David's, kingdom, and, it's very much Zionist propaganda. There's also an animated series that's coming out in a few months, too, that makes the same case. And, it would be really interesting for Johnny and you to discuss this issue. On the Electronic Intifada, I think the guy who founded it is the bald-headed man. His name is Ali. I can't pronounce his last name. But he had several people on, and they were discussing why the Gazans will never quit. And the point that they made was that, our history dates all the way back to when Ramses III fought the Sea Peoples, and then they fought to a stalemate, and then he gave them the Gaza Strip all the way up to the coast to Ashkabat or Ascalon on the coast, and they established the Philistine vassal kingdom, and that survived for almost 600 years, really up until the Neo-Babylonians, finally crushed them. But their point is they never went away, and that they can back it up with archaeological and DNA evidence. And, if they survived all the way from the late Bronze Age through all the different conquests, they're not going anywhere. I think that's a really interesting point. I'd really like to hear you and Johnny Punish talk about that.
Hey, Vinny, make sure I get those URLs, a URL or URLs on Johnny's discussions on this. I'd be glad to get him on. I'm sure he'd love to get into this because clearly, as you understand, when we start getting into all of these claims in regard to ancient history and archaeology and covenants and who really controlled what, this isn't as cut and dried as, of course, Christian Zionism might suggest that it is. In regard to this whole question as it relates to archaeology
and historical claims on territory. So get that to me by one means or another, and I'd be glad to get him on the show so that he can offer us his perspective on this, because quite clearly, you don't have to go very far when you're reading through literature of any type on this subject before the bias of the particular person or persons in question becomes obvious. This is reminds me that some years ago, this is very improbable now. I was once, believe it or not, the president of a dying dispensationalist, pro-Christian Zionist Bible college here in San Antonio. Now, lest people go, really? I was the only non-dispensationalist and non-Christian Zionist on the faculty. Due to all the financial problems that they were having, I became a caretaker president for what essentially was an undergraduate division of Dallas Theological Seminary. That's just it's a funny but preposterous aspect of my autobiography. But nonetheless, I was teaching a class on prophecy and eschatology. And my library has even more materials on this than it did in those days. That institution closed down almost 32 years ago now. But in regard to this whole business of just prophecy alone, the minute that somebody was saying, well, you know, the Bible says thus and so, and the next thing I said to them, have you heard of, and I said, I wrote these terms up on the board. Dispensational premillennialism, historic premillennialism, amillennialism, and postmillennialism. Nobody in that class had heard of any of these terms, and I said, what you need to understand is that it's not as much a question of what the Bible says, but as what these different schools of thought, how they exegete these texts and apply them, so that whatever you decide to believe, that you need to be aware of the fact that this business of simply saying the Bible said, or Professor so-and-so said that the Bible clearly teaches that, like the dispensationalist view of the 70th week of Daniel being the classic one in Daniel chapter 9, I said, be aware that this view that you have been taught here, which falls into this first school of thought that I wrote up here on the board, that this school of thought originated in the first third of the 19th century. Didn't exist prior to that time. Oh, there were some strains of it from a Jesuit named Riviera or Ribers in the 16th century, I believe. But the John Nelson Darby Plymouth Brethren view of these events occurred in the British Isles in the first third of the 19th century. It crossed the Atlantic Ocean and entered the United States in so-called evangelical churches largely after the American War between the states via the Scofield Reference Bible. So then that raised the whole question of Scofield, the history of Scofield. I introduced Joseph Canfield's book on Scofield to them. They were unaware of any of this stuff. And then I talked about the Oxford Publishing House, the Oxford University Publishing House, and the Jays that run it and own it, and why they had an interest in promoting and publishing the Scofield Reference Bible. That then got into the next question for the class, and I just said, look, I hope I open up a new understanding with all of you is how you do research, whatever you decide to believe. But when you get into history and schools of thought, I said, and look at some of the best biblical commentaries. Get yourself the best Roman Catholic one-volume biblical commentary, the best Eastern Orthodox biblical commentary that you could find with the study notes, something like the, even if you get like the Orthodox Study Bible, get the Lutheran Study Bible and a good Lutheran commentary on this. Then you add a non-dispensational evangelical commentary on this, like the one from the ones from the Westminster Princeton tradition. I'm thinking of Dr. O.T. Allis in particular on this subject of the 70th week of Daniel. And then add the only things that you've been exposed to thus far, I presume, which are the Scofield Reference Bible, John Hagee, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson perspectives on prophecy. So we emphasize historical recency, we emphasize different schools of thought, and when you start looking at all of these different traditions that are far, far older than the dispensational model, we discover that some awfully bright people over centuries not only had never heard of John Nelson Darby's interpretation of all of this or the Scofield Reference Bible, but they have very valid reasons that you'll see in their study notes on why this may be a viewpoint that you choose to reject. This gets back to you with archaeology and the need for me to get on the horn with Johnny about this. This would make for a great show. So this has been a long-winded response on my part, but it does scratch where I itch in terms of running into things in the so-called Christian community among people who think that they're reasonably well-informed on the subject of prophecy and eschatology and the modern state of Israel, when in fact they may not only be uninformed, but as Dr. O.T. Alice put it in his book Prophecy in the Church, which came out 3 years before the founding of the modern state of Israel, Dr. Alice knew where all of this was headed, and he said, this is dangerous. And sure enough, all these decades later, he looks pretty much right on target in terms of what he says in that book, which I would urge our listeners to get a hold of. Dr. O.T. Alice, Prophecy in the Church. Talk to Westminster Theological Seminary or, I believe, Baker Publishing about getting that volume. In the meantime, I gave Alan Zabrowski short shrift on his article for the UNS Review on the German elections. That's okay. He has a very thick skin. But I want you to read the article. If I've achieved that, then you're in good shape. Listen to Weber's podcast of this last week, and let's take a look at all of the additional things that I'm going to put on there for you in the next 24 hours or so in regard to Mr. Trump and Mr. Zelensky and their little face-off today at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Until then, you've been listening to Mark Dankoff from the Republic Broadcasting Network. Take a look at the videos on the roadmap as well. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, fact bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yoga vaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org. To watch the full video and see more information, use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.